This is The Impromptu, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. And now, your hosts for today, Michael Norton and Alex Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're live.
That. Okay. And we're back.
Yeah, it's definitely been a long time.
It was an extended vacation.
Yeah. Kind of rested a little.
Mm-hmm.
Took in a lot of tech news over the past few months.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a good nap?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Good hibernation.
Yeah. It's crucial to rest after doing a podcast for a year or so.
Yeah. Sometimes you can get burnt out.
Yep. But now the shock mount is
the shock mount is pretty decent on the mic, but I've got to get it to the right level, I actually had to prop it on to a box to get it to the right height, so that's kind of annoying.
Well, my pop filter's kind of haphazardly attached to my desk.
Yeah, actually, I don't have a pop
there.
They sell a separate pop filter that I think it attaches to the shock mount, so I'll probably have to get that. And I may get a separate stand for this thing, one of those adjustable ones that you can just kind of move around anywhere to any height. That's really what I want.
Yeah.
Did you see Dan Benjamin's video that he put out about using good mic technique?
I did not.
It was pretty good. I realized that it's funny because it's been so long. Like, I used to take audio engineering, and I've kind of I'm a little rusty, and I've forgotten a lot of basic things, like something as simple as just placing the mic properly really makes a big difference for the sound quality. And I think when I previously was recording with the Blue Yeti, the microphone was a little too far away, and I didn't have it quite positioned as well as it could have been. So with the way that I have this one set up is that I've got it propped up high enough now that it's at basically at the same level of my mouth, and I'm reasonably close to it. So I'll try to avoid the popping sounds, but I'll have to get a filter at some point.
Yeah. Really, it's unavoidable. Your voice eventually just makes those sounds. So
yeah.
So how have you been?
Yeah, I've been okay. It's been an interesting time, actually, since the last time we stopped doing the show. I lost my job, and I was basically trying to figure out what I was going to do with myself, and decided to put more time and energy into working on FeedPress, which is what I've been doing. Also decided to dabble in acting a little bit. It's something I've been thinking about for quite a number of years, but now that I have extra free time, I figured why not, right? So I've been, I've been doing acting training since July, I think, July or August. And I'm on the second level of the program, just finishing that up next week. We did a little bit of voiceover work last week, but it's mostly been on camera stuff, so learning how to do auditions properly, both for commercial TV movie stuff and learning the basics, like all the lingo that you need to understand while being on set, how to behave in front of a camera, all the technical aspects an actor has to learn, like knowing your mark and knowing what to do when you're blocking a scene, learning how to do multicam stuff, which was a term I was not familiar with. I assumed, multicam means multiple cameras, which is part of it, but way more complex than I figured. Apparently, multicam is something that's most common on TV sitcoms when they do live recordings in front of an audience. So they'll usually have one camera per actor. It's usually something done in those types of scenarios, like comedies and stuff like that, less common in movies. But it's been pretty interesting. I'm going to be taking a voiceover class, dedicated one, with this guy named Kirby Morrow. And yeah, if you look him up on IMDb, I'm familiar with
his work.
He's done a lot of anime, but he has done on screen stuff before as well. So he's both on camera and voiceover. But yeah, he's pretty long history of cartoons and stuff like that.
Yeah, he even did one of my more favorite, graphic novel, animated graphic novel, I would call it.
What was that? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's surprisingly obscure. It was done by some guys from around here. And it's basically about this guy who tries to engineer an apocalypse in order to kind of save the world. And there's these people from around the world who kind of are chosen to stop it, sort of. It plays with destiny and fate and free will and is there a god and like just a bunch of different
things. Is this like a multi-season show?
No, the whole thing is about, I want to say, 6 hours long. There's like a series of chapters and it's been forever since I last saw it. It started out as a Flash animation series, and they eventually completely remastered it as a movie with voice acting. All right, nice. No, sorry, 12 hours long.
12, okay. All right, so that's split into
24 chapters. Yeah, it's basically an entire novel that plays out as a movie. Essentially. And the way they remastered it was really cool. They basically had like all of it was like graphic novel art and they sort of animated it. Like people would walk down the street, but it would be like the drawn art of the character would just kind of bounce up and down.
Oh, it's one of those. Yeah, I don't really like those. I think I know what you're talking about. Those Marvel has done a few of these things. They're like they call them motion comics. I'm not a huge fan of those.
This was basically the original motion comic.
Okay. Just seems like it's partly animated. Why not just take it all the way?
Yeah, I don't know. There's maybe something to be said for it. It still kind of remains partially a comic and partially kind of a narrative-driven enterprise rather than you kind of focusing on the animation. Like it still puts the emphasis on the story rather than, oh, hey, cool, look at this crazy motion sequence where they're fighting bad guys. It's like,
yeah,
it doesn't draw you away from what's really important.
Fair enough.
But yeah, it's not for everyone. But if you ever get a chance, it's a really cool story and it's still somewhat culturally relevant. But yeah, it takes quite a while to watch it, so you'd have to break it out into chunks, probably.
So what else is going on? So what do you want to... I guess we should probably touch on the Gamergate stuff, because I don't think that's... Well, I mean, it definitely has had more coverage lately, what with people like Anita Sarkeesian going on the Colbert Report and whatnot, but... I don't think enough, especially podcasts, I don't think enough podcasts, especially male-dominated podcasts, are talking about this enough. Or at all.
Yeah. I don't think enough people are talking about it, really.
No.
I mean, it's basically pulled back the curtain and revealed just this awful exclusion at the heart of the game community.
Yeah,
not just the players, but also development of games.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I knew it was kind of always there, but I was a little shocked.
I think we all did to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, I never knew it was this bad until, you know, the whole Gamergate thing kind of started. But I mean, because you know, you see it when you go to, you know, at forums and places like 4chan and whatnot. Yeah. You expect it to, you know, you expect that kind of vitriol to be there, but people are really showing their true colors lately, and it's a bit shocking to see people who are, you know, so-called professionals in the industry saying things that they're just really disappointing. They should not be saying these kind of things, and it's been a rough time for a lot of people.
And some heroes have emerged as well. Tim Schafer, for example, he's stood up on, I guess I want to call it the right side. I mean, yeah, we're the good guys. That's basically it, period.
Right.
I mean, when you're on the side of a group or a force whose sole purpose is essentially to prevent women from taking part in an entire industry, an entire fandom.
Right.
You're on the wrong side. You're the bad Absolutely. Guy. And
yeah, and you can't really disguise it with, oh, well, you know, the movement started out about ethics in
actually, it's all about ethics in journalism. Yeah.
Right.
You just, like, yeah. They use that as a smokescreen. It's like, absolutely. That's the go-to excuse for the whole thing. It's like, well, we're just trying to expose this corruption and whatever, when really, no, you're not exposing corruption. You're attacking women. That is the only thing that you're doing.
Yeah, so what are we going to do about it?
And, well, I mean, it's a difficult issue. There's a lot that needs to be done. Really, I guess it starts with opening a dialogue involving women and just kind of, I don't know, opening a dialogue. No, that sounds stupid. Really?
I think, you know,
hire more women and
I would like
invite
to think,
women to panels. And
absolutely. You know, I think it goes, I'd like to give people the benefit of the doubt that that people can be, I'd like to think that we can talk sense into some of these people, and I'm sure some of them are a lost cause, but I think it needs to start at the top down. I think people that are making games, especially if it's, you know, obviously this is a male-dominated culture still, and a lot of people that are making games are still men. And I think people that are working at these companies need to stand up for women, and I think they need to... they need to start changing things. They need to hire more women, and they need to stand up for women's rights. And this is an industry that needs to be more inclusive. So I think it needs to start there, because I think if everybody starts banding together in support of equality and, you know, including women in this space, not just people that need to be making games, but also consumers recognizing that there is a huge chunk of people out there that want to play games that are women, and this is not just something that they should be included in. This is like, you're losing money. Like, this is a huge community, and it doesn't mean that you need to be making games that are quote unquote girly games. Like, but I mean, just doing something as simple as, like, don't always include a male character as the only option, as a protagonist, right? Like, allow someone to choose the opposite sex in a game. You should be able... This is something that I really think you should be able to choose when you're playing a game. And I don't think you can use the excuse now in 2014 that, oh, well, it's going to cost more money and we can't really do it because we'd... You should be thinking about this before you even build the game. Like, this should be at the forefront of your mind. That is the base requirement for building a game, is recognizing that not everyone is a straight male, that there are different genders, that there are people with different sexual orientations, and you need to recognize all of this. What about, and it's not just women too. I mean, what about black people? What about Asian people? Like, all these other cultures that are just completely ignored in games, for the most part.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, to borrow from Steve Jobs a little, basically, if you only see a white male protagonist, they blew it. Period.
Yeah.
Like, that should not be the de facto standard anymore. That's not what the world looks like. So why should games look that way? And those excuses of, well, it fits the story. Well, bullshit. Mm-hmm. Make the story fit having multiple potential protagonists. Or design the story in such a way that the cast of characters is diverse.
Right.
Don't whitewash your story. That's what these people are basically doing. They're saying, well, we want to make a kick-ass, fun, awesome game, so obviously we have to have a white guy as the hero.
Right. I've heard I've heard these Gamergate people saying, well, why do you want to take this fantasy away from us? What if we do want to fantasize about playing this strong white male warrior? It's like, fine, that's fine. It's fine to have that fantasy, but that's the only option in games. So
why can't you be a strong female warrior?
All these other people. Like, it doesn't need to be that way. We don't want to exclude specific people. Everybody should be included in this thing. So that's why I think it's just an excuse to say that you can't build a game with those options and recognize those different people who want to play these games.
And then for every bad example, there are good examples out there. I just got an Xbox One with Sunset Overdrive, and Sunset Overdrive lets you from the start decide if you want to play as a female character or a male character. And you can actually customize that on the fly in the middle of the game.
Nice. Exactly. So that's what I'm talking about.
If they can do it, why can't everyone else? Yeah. Or BioWare, every single game they've made for the past decade, Mass Effect, Knights of the Old Republic, going into Dragon Age now, well, the new Dragon Age, you can be a man, you can be a woman, you can be an elf man or woman, you can be straight, you can be gay, you can do whatever you want. They can do it, so why can't anyone else?
They can.
It's not hard.
This is not a technology issue. This is a people problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that just proves it. Like, you see these studios actually doing it, so you know it can be done. That's not a problem.
I feel both saddened by this whole movement, but also optimistic, because I feel like this is going to be a passing phase. I think we're going to look at this whole situation in the future, maybe 5-10 years down the road, where most games that are going to be coming out are going to include women and recognize people that are of different sexual orientations. And we're going to look back on this as a real dark time. And any game studio that doesn't recognize and include other cultures and people are going to stick out like a sore thumb, and it's going to be embarrassing to even be in that situation. So I don't know. I feel hopeful that this is going to go away, especially as this gets more and more media coverage and mainstream coverage, which it desperately needs.
Yeah. I mean, to me, Gamergate is essentially gaming experiencing growing pains or teething as it transitions from being a baby, being a childish industry towards maturity and becoming diverse and inclusive. And what we're experiencing is essentially the last vestige of people who see things backwards, essentially. Right. Like, these are these people crying out, saying, we don't want things to change at the peak of things about to change.
Right.
Or things changing already. They're fighting against the tide.
Yeah, these people are going to be, they're going to go kicking and screaming into a new era where this is not tolerated anymore. And I think more needs to be done in other areas like legislation as well. Because it's extremely hard to prosecute people that are anonymous, that are on websites like 8chan, where you see the author of that site admitting that they don't log IPs and all this information that they could be logging that they don't log for the sake of people being remaining anonymous. But that's a problem, right? You know, free speech takes you only to a certain point, but I think, you know, yes, you can say whatever's on your mind, but there are also penalties for saying certain things. Like, you can say whatever you want, but there has to be, like, we have to be able to do something about these people that are sending rape and death threats to people and releasing public information or personal information to the public about that person, which is awful. I mean, there have to be ways that we can find out who these people are. And right now you can't do that with sites like 8chan. So no. I think something needs to be done on the legislation side.
It especially doesn't help that a company like Twitter is essentially ignoring the pleas of thousands of women who are being harassed and attacked daily by these people.
Well,
these people
that's
who
another
they block, who then create brand new accounts to continue attacking them. And it's something they've ignored for a long time because it doesn't fit their business strategy to be able to permanently block or report on people for saying crappy stuff.
And they seem to, like, people seem to randomly get verified accounts on Twitter. I don't understand why someone like Brianna Wu doesn't have a verified account yet. That's just unfathomable.
Yeah. Because, of course, they've been exploiting it.
I think it was John Syracuse on an episode of ATP was saying that why can't anybody just get a verified account? And I totally agree. That's something that I think app.net got right. Because being able to create a sock puppet account and actually convince people that you're that person is just wrong. And Twitter has the capability to fix this, and they haven't done it yet, which is just embarrassing.
Yeah. I feel like if you're even remotely, I don't know, renowned in some way, like if you're a developer at a studio, if you're anywhere where your opinion even matters slightly, you should have the option of being verified, because somebody will just try to exploit that.
Right.
Like, maybe something like, if you have more than 200 followers.
Yeah, there are all sorts of things like that they can do. So it's kind of disappointing. I mean, they've stayed very quiet on this. I'm hoping that they're going to come out in the next couple months with some new functionality for people to, you know, to maybe have a little bit more control over their timeline. Like, not show certain tweets from people that have an account that is, you know, younger than 2 or 3 months with a certain amount of tweets, like you're saying. Certain things like that I think that they can do. So hopefully they're working on something.
Yeah. Well, they have a new product director, so maybe they're looking at that finally.
Yeah.
Like, you just get the sense that they're not taking it seriously.
No. No. You know, in something as simple as just putting out a blog post about this, acknowledging the issue, would have been fine with me, right? Just to know, just give me some indication that you actually care about this, that you want to do something about this. Just don't say nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always annoyed me sometimes when people create, people create parody accounts, especially of celebrities, and sometimes some of those accounts can be really convincing. I can't imagine that would make the real person very happy about that. This is another thing that I think verified accounts would make a huge difference. Because, I mean, you can't stop people from creating those accounts, but those could get shut down pretty quickly. I think they should anyways.
Yeah. I mean, obviously parody falls under fair use, protected, whatever. But somebody parodying someone in order to say hurtful things like you've been doing to Brianna Wu is just not right at all. Especially because they've been able to get usernames that are slightly similar enough that if you're just glancing at it, for example, replacing an L with a 1.
Right. Right, exactly. Yeah, slight misspellings, and some people won't notice the difference. I mean, of course, you should be able to notice by the number of followers. If you really know who Brianna Wu is, she has a lot of followers. So somebody creates a new account and they have like 100 followers. I mean, it should be pretty obvious that it's not that real person.
Yeah. Yeah. It's...
Oh, what a depressing, sad time.
Well...
We should talk about something positive,
though. We just saw...
Is there anything in the gaming industry that's happening right now that is actually good news? There has to be something. Give me a small nugget of something. Come on.
Okay. I'm loading Polygon.
So what's the deal with
Zombies
PlayStation
Return to
experience?
Call of Duty?
Have you seen the announcement of the PlayStation experience? What is that?
Yeah, so that looks like sort of a mini E3 for PlayStation. They're like holding it in Las Vegas, and basically, I guess all of their most hardcore fans get invitations, and there's going to be demos for a lot of their upcoming games or new trailers. Like, I know Uncharted 4 is going to be there, for example. And then a lot of games that are going to be coming out in the short term towards the start of next year, like Bloodborne.
There were a bunch of games that were supposed to come out, I think, last month, but got pushed back till next year, like Batman Arkham Knight.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be released in October.
There have been a few others that have been pushed back.
There's a new Far Cry game coming out too, right? I think, but that's not till like late next year, I think. I think I saw a pre-order for that on...
No, Far Cry 4 comes out, I think, soon. Let's see.
Okay, there was
November 18th.
Okay, maybe it was wrong. Let me just... I'm right on the PSN website. I thought I saw a pre-order for Far Cry 4 that said something like December 2015, but that must have been a mistake.
Yeah, I would think so.
It's like, your pre-order will arrive in 300 and something days. I'm like, okay. Okay, yeah,
must
you're right.
Be a placeholder.
I think that was a mistake, because it now says it November 18th.
Yeah. Yeah, they probably just stubbed that in until they knew the actual date. Unless, wait, you're looking at the actual PlayStation Store.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at right now. $99, Far Cry 4 Gold Edition.
It's nothing. The Call of Duty Advanced Warfare Pro Edition is over $100.
I'm confused. How many different editions do they have? I keep losing track. They keep releasing so many Call of Duty games. I have no idea which one is which.
There's the Day Zero Edition, which gives you access to the game now. So, like, screenshots and videos are already rolling in. There's actually a particularly funny part. I don't know if you've seen it already. Press R to pay respects.
No,
at a funeral. Yeah, it's pretty sad. It's taking QuickTime events to a whole new level of infamy. Yeah, here it is. Oh, no, it's press F. Press F to pay respects. Pasted it into the chat.
I'm just pulling it up. Oh, yeah, I saw a screenshot of that. I think somebody posted on Twitter. It's kind of odd.
Yeah, it's like...
And what happens
essentially
if you pay your respects?
Distilling... I think you have no choice, probably. I mean, maybe they thought of that. Maybe you walk away from the coffin and they're all like, what the hell, man? But I don't know. You probably can't skip it, I would think. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just getting ridiculous at this point. It's like they're distilling the horrors of war and the human cost of war to a button press. It's like you're at a funeral. You're it's supposed to be odd. Mourning this person, and it goes press F. Interesting choice. Like I probably would have gone in a different direction, like a cutscene, like an in-game cutscene that you have no control over.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't know. Or just automatically pay respects as you approach the coffin, perhaps. But
I think one of
they went in a different direction.
I think one of the things that makes games so interesting as an art form is, you know, for better or worse, like how far can you push the medium in certain ways? And certain games do stir up a lot of controversy. But I find that I still find it all fascinating, regardless if I agree with certain game mechanics or decisions that were made.
Mm.
How do you feel? What are your thoughts on the Grand Theft Auto series from a representation of women perspective? Because I've had some thoughts about this recently because I haven't played those games in quite a while. Like I think the last one that I played was Vice City. And I remember enjoying...
Well, I played... Yeah. I played 5 almost the way through.
Mm.
It's just very... Like, I think you kind of expect it going in, but at this point I feel like Rockstar should know better.
Mm.
It's like, with Grand Theft Auto 4, with Red Dead Redemption, with Grand Theft Auto 5... They're starting to kind of get into this more cinematic storytelling space.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, like, Red Dead Redemption had one of the best stories I've ever seen in a game about revenge and how far it drives people and how pointless it is in the end and all these other things. Fighting change. Just a brilliant story. And then Grand Theft Auto 5, just awful stereotypes.
Everywhere. I haven't played Grand Theft Auto 5. I mean, visually it looks striking from what I've seen, but
oh yeah, it's a beautiful game.
I mean, I feel like wrong, I don't know how different it is from Vice City, because obviously, I mean, you could just run around town and you know punch hookers in the face. I mean, all day if you wanted to, but. I don't know how different it is from that, but I feel like as games get more cinematic and realistic, I feel like it's not as easy to become disconnected from the game. You know what I mean? Like if it looks cartoony, even if it's like, you know, gratuitously violent, I don't know. I feel like I'm able to separate it more, but as games become more and more realistic to the point where if one day we cannot tell the difference between, or we almost can't tell the difference between the game and real life, I don't know. I just feel like, I don't know. That says something. I don't know. It seems to impact me more as games become more realistic.
Yeah. It's because it crosses the uncanny valley and it makes us kind of connect with what's happening. We kind of subconsciously feel like it's real. And so we sort of sympathize with what's happening to the people in the game.
Yeah.
Which is what kind of created one of the bigger controversies about Grand Theft Auto 5, because there's a part of the game where you're forced to torture someone.
Right.
And I haven't actually played it, but it's apparently horrible. And some people actually could not get through it.
Yeah.
They just put the game away and refuse to continue playing. And that says something.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
As these games get so real, so detailed, where is the line?
Right.
Where do we say, you know what, this is so much like real life that there are some things we just can't have in this game. And, I mean, obviously art is all about pushing boundaries and crossing lines, but forcing a player to torture someone in a highly detailed, highly realistic game? No.
Yeah, you know, I feel like it's... it's different when you have like an open world game where, for example, like Grand Theft Auto, even when I played Vice City, yeah, I killed people in the game, but I didn't make an effort to kill every single woman that I saw on the street. So I had restraint because I felt like, well, that's just, it's silly. Even though the game is cartoony looking and pixelated to some degree, but I feel like, I don't know, it's like, but violence doesn't bug me per se. It's one thing to fight your way through a game for, you know, if you're in war or whatever, that's just war. Killing for a specific reason, whether it's revenge or vengeance or whatever, I don't know, I feel different about that than, say, if I'm put in the shoes of, let's say, a serial killer, and I have to just, like, rape and kill women. Like, that to me would not be acceptable in a game. Like, why would I want to play that? I'm not going to pay to play a serial killer who would go around doing that, right? I just feel like, for me, there are certain lines that I can't cross in a game, and I don't know if we should be going down that way in games. Like, how far do you want to push it? Like, you know, because what does that tell people? Like, yes, it is a game. Now, obviously, any normal person can separate themselves from reality in a game just because you play a violent game, or just because you're exposed to certain types of things. It doesn't mean you're going to go and reproduce that in real life. But I think we have a certain obligation to kind of say, no, we're not going to take it in this direction, right? Because it is an art form, yeah. And you have that power. You have the control over what gets into that product that you're going to be putting out to the masses.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, obviously some of these people will scream, oh, censorship, we should be able to do this. But then it's like, you have to sit there and go, why? Why do you want to be able to do these things? Is this something that interests you?
Yeah.
Like
I never got, like, games like Postal. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a prude. Like, I play a lot of violent games. I like first-person shooters. I like horror movies that are incredibly violent. But I like games that have deep narrative, and that there's, like, there's a reason that's driving somebody to do something, whether it's they're seeking vengeance for a loved one that has been killed, or, you know, you're going to war, whatever the reason is. But I like games that have some kind of deep narrative. But just like a game like Postal, I could never get myself to play a game like that. It just seemed totally pointless. Like,
yeah,
it's just random killing. There is no plot here.
Yeah. And more disturbingly, it rewards you for killing people in ever more disturbing and,
yeah,
quote unquote, creative ways. It's like,
yeah,
this is not a game that needs to exist.
Yeah, exactly. I just think games like that are just kind of pointless, and I just don't see why people waste their time building games like that.
Yeah. And then on the other hand, you have really cool cinematic games that are just about the story, like Gone Home, which still is one of my favorite games to this day. And you have people going, oh, it's so boring. What's the point of it? Why can't I shoot things? Why aren't there ghosts in the house that can kill me? Like, that's not the point of the game.
Right. Yeah, you totally missed the boat, like, if that's... Yeah. There are plenty of those kind of games. If you want to go play them, go find those games. But obviously, certain games like that,
yeah,
they have a different... there's a different purpose for those types of games. You can't blame the creators of it. I openly proud to play first-person shooters, but there are certain games that sometimes I like to take a break and play games that are not violent, and I just want to be totally immersed in a deep, rich narrative that doesn't have violence, and I'm fine with that. Like, sometimes it's just like walking around and, you know, outside and Actually, like right now I'm playing The Last of Us, and yes, it is like a survival type horror game. There's so many moments in that game where you're walking around this landscape, and it's, you know, there's like this sense of dread, and you don't know what's going to happen next. But sometimes you're just looking at this like beautiful horizon, and there's just this decay and everything around you. But it's just beautiful to like walk through and experience that. And we have the technology to make these games that look so realistic like that. They're able to just fully immerse yourself in that kind of environment. And I love that. I love taking a break from other types of games that are more violent.
Yeah. And with The Last of Us, like, I'm glad you brought up The Last of Us. It's a really good example of a careful balance between violence and narrative and kind of tranquility, I guess. It's like, it's a dangerous world. It's a post-civilization world, I guess you want to call it. And there's danger everywhere. Yeah. There's the fungus zombies. There's bands of raiders who will do horrible things to you. And then at the same time, nature is reclaiming the land, and animals are coming back, and all of this life at the same time. And the pacing in the game is another brilliant.
That's actually what I was just thinking. The pacing is excellent. There's so many moments where nothing is actually happening, and you have this breathing room, if you know what I mean. Like you're looking at what's going on. You're just like taking it all in, and you kind of feel the sort of desperation of these characters that are just kind of living from moment to moment, and they're just trying to survive in this world. And some of the cityscapes
really pays off.
Yeah. Yeah, and some of the cityscapes, you walk into these places and these like just absolutely destroyed cities, but then you have like this overgrowth, and like you said, you see kind of like nature bouncing back and starting to take over, right? And that's just amazing to look at.
Yeah. And yeah, that and the quiet moments, it's a testament to the narrative, because you end up really caring about these characters and what happens to them. And that's something that not a lot of studios can do, but of course it's Naughty Dog. And over the past three Uncharted games, they have pretty much nailed cinematic storytelling. And The Last of Us is just a masterclass in it. From start to finish, you are with these characters and you want to see it through to the end. And even though they do terrible things to survive, even though unspeakable things happen, it's just this journey that you have to follow through.
Yeah. Yeah, so far so good. I'm, 3 hours maybe into it. So I don't know how long the game is, but so far it's been a good experience.
Yeah, there's it goes on for quite a while. There's multiple chapters, and I think the game roughly covers about a year in real world time. Like, obviously it skips in places, but because of course they're traveling across country, so it takes about a year, because it's like they leave in the summer, and then it's fall, and then it's winter, and then it's spring. I think it's spring at the end of the game, or like late spring leading into summer. So more or less a year, I think.
Right. Yeah, and that's really cool to see that the seasons change like that. And now we've got, I mean, especially if you're playing it on PS4, we've got the hardware to make these amazing sort of graphically rich games where you can see the seasons changing. And just like little moments, I find myself paying attention to things like looking at the way the rainfall sort of bounces off a puddle of water, just looking at the reflection and the way the lighting is cast, you know, and the lip syncing and the character seems pretty good too in these games. You know, actually speaking of lip syncing, I've heard of some complaints from Alien Isolation. I think it was Brianna Wu that was saying that the lip syncing wasn't quite good in that game. I haven't actually played it yet, so it's something I've been meaning to give a shot as well, because I just love those kind of like horror survival games, the suspenseful ones.
Mm. Yeah, I heard mixed things about Alien Isolation, but I think at some point I'll get around to it.
So you bought an Xbox One. So was it just for Sunset Yep. Overdrive, or were there any other reasons that you wanted that?
Well, it was that, and I figured it was about the right time to get one.
Yeah.
It's been a year, and
price has gone down.
Price has gone down. The exclusive titles are starting to come out. Like leading into the holiday, we've got Sunset Overdrive. We've got the Halo Master Chief Collection.
Mm-hmm.
Leading into the Halo 5 multiplayer beta and that exclusive Ridley Scott series that bridges Halo 4 and Halo 5.
Never played any of the Halo games.
Mm. It's a good story. It's a big story. Lots of lore. Stuff outside the games that they reference in the games. So it gets a little confusing sometimes. At least towards the end of the series. Or the current point in the series that we're at. Because Halo 4, like, this guy just comes out of nowhere. But if you were paying attention to the terminals in the game that are hidden and some other stuff, you know exactly who he is.
Hmm.
And then it's like, you thought you killed him at the end of Halo 4, but then in a comic book, they reveal that he survived. So it's like, it's kind of all over the place.
Sounds confusing. Like,
yeah. But, it's a very rich world. Like, the world building is quite excellent. And that's a testament to the foundation that Bungie built.
Bungie, is that the same company that did Destiny?
Yeah.
Okay.
They left Microsoft and left Halo behind to make Destiny, basically.
Hmm. That's something I've been playing as well, but I haven't played it in a few weeks. I think I got to level... what level's my character? Not very high. I think I'm 12 or 13. Then I kind of got stuck because all of a sudden all of the missions required like level 15 or 16 recommended. And so somehow I've fallen behind. And that kind of pisses me off when games allow me to get to that point, because I'm not really experienced with these types of games where you have to like level up a character. So now I'm like, okay, the only easy way to really level up is to go and do these multiplayer events, which suck in this game because I'm now put into a match with someone who's a level 26 character, and there is no... That just seems ridiculous to me. Like, why would you match me up to somebody who's a level 26 character? Like, as soon as I spawn, I'm, like, dead in, like, 10 seconds.
Yeah, it's really weird. They kind of made it like it's part FPS, but then they also made it part MMO as well.
Right.
It's unique, let's say. Mm-hmm.
I do like that. I mean, I like that they're kind of innovative with the sort of mesh of those two types of genres, and it graphically looks amazing, and I enjoyed a lot of the single player story missions. And now, I wouldn't say the story is incredibly deep, but it has been enjoyable. But yeah, the only thing that's annoying so far is just the whole grinding to get to do certain types of missions to progress the story further. It's a little frustrating.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm playing it wrong. I don't know.
And probably not. And then, I mean, past level 20, it's like, a major grind fest because you have to get armor with more light points in order to level past 20 to get to level whatever to be able to do the raid, the Vault of Glass, and then get even better armor that gets you to level 30 so that you have a chance at completing the stuff for the first expansion, which comes out this month, I think. The Dark Below, which adds several new story missions, a strike, and a raid. Actually, I think it's two strikes. One of them is PlayStation exclusive, which has Xbox owners all pissed off.
Anytime a game is exclusively released for one platform, there's always somebody that gets in.
Well, it's not so much that. It's that it's a cross-platform title, but certain DLC stuff is being limited to one console or the other.
Oh, okay.
Like, that's the issue. So, like, Xbox players are paying the same amount of money for slightly less content than PlayStation players. Which is understandable. Like, I get that Activision signed some sort of exclusivity thing with Sony to have certain content only for PS4, but to charge the same amount of money for less content on Xbox doesn't make much sense. Like, they should get a discount just because there's less content. Although, I think they said it's limited exclusivity, so it may eventually be released for Xbox, but that may be a while.
It'd be nice if Sunset Overdrive came to the PS4, because I really don't think I want to buy an Xbox One just for that game.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, buying a console just for one game is crazy. And it seems like that's what I did, but no. There are more games coming.
I wouldn't mind playing the Forza game, the new one, with
Horizon,
like a steering wheel. I like playing racing games with steering wheels, though, like the full clutch pedal setup for manual driving.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never really been a fan of racing games.
I bought Drive Club, pre-ordered it, paid $50 or whatever, and that was just a complete mess. Did you follow all the issues that they had with the launch of that game?
Yeah, I
like,
heard
it was basically like the first day, like, the first day, and pretty much like the first week. The multiplayer aspect was just like dead on arrival, did not work. Whatever, they had a bunch of issues with their networking code, and they did. I'm not sure if they didn't expect that many people to be playing it, but whatever their network code that they shipped with that game was just like, it was so bad that you couldn't get onto the servers. So I think they released two or three patches that all had networking code improvements just to get people onto the servers. That networking code that supposedly helped reduce server load. So it was really bad. Visually, the game looks pretty cool, but racing games are fun once in a while. I do get bored of them after a little while, though.
Yeah. You can only drive around a circle so many times. Although,
well, it's not even that.
Obviously, the tracks are,
they're not circles, but yeah, I see.
No, I know. I'm obviously not, unless it's like Daytona or something. I know the tracks are much more complex.
Yeah.
I think they've gotten even more complex now. Now it's like twisting mountain roads and dirt tracks and
they've got real locations, right, from all over the world that you can drive around
Drive Club.
Yeah, and they got
don't they have like most of the United States in the game or something?
I don't know. I haven't really explored too much, but the cars look great. I mean, the graphics look really good. There is some crash damage. Yeah. It's not ridiculous though. At least I haven't been able. I've crashed a lot. I haven't totally like ruined my car yet. And the sounds are pretty good, but I don't know how it compares to Forza. A lot of people still seem to hold up the Forza Horizon game as like kind of the gold standard in racing games right now. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Impromptu. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to leave a rating on iTunes and let your friends know about us. Detailed show notes for each episode are available on our website at theimpromptu.net. You can follow the show on Twitter at theimpromptu, as well as our hosts individually at Zen Impulse for Michael Norton and at Zero Distraction for Alex Knight. As we are entirely listener-supported, you can donate to us at theimpromptu.net/donate. All proceeds go towards covering bandwidth as well as equipment upgrades to uphold the highest level of audio quality you've come to expect. We really do appreciate your support, and we look forward to seeing you next time.